Monogamish Podcast contains content intended for mature audiences. The views expressed here are for entertainment purposes only. Please enjoy the show.
Hi, Ishes. I'm Justina.
And I'm Kenji.
And we're monogamish.
Today, we met Rowan, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
At the share ball.
Yes.
Oh, I did. At the share ball. I don't know when you met her.
I think I met her previous to... I met you at the first share ball.
Yeah, in June.
June, yes.
In June, okay. So a few months ago.
And then we met at the meetings, and then...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
So good. Oh, that one in June was amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, a lot of fun.
Folks, Rowan Thomas.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Oh,
I'm
my God.
So great.
We appreciate you coming on.
Yes.
Thank you so very much.
Rowan, let's start with you kind of identifying who you are and your role like in this community.
My name is Rowan. I use they, them, and we pronouns. As far as my roles in the community, I am an educator, a researcher, a writer, a poet, I'm an artist. We were talking about tabletop gaming. I'm a D&D-er. I'm a dungeon master sometimes. And a dungeon master both in the dungeon and on the table. So both kinds of dungeon masters.
Oh, totally. Love it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the last con I worked security instead of dungeon monitoring. But yeah, absolutely. I've totally been a dungeon master before in every sense of the word.
Wow.
But a lot of my education and research and work centers around LGBTQ folks, people of color, and kind of the intersections of those communities with alternative lifestyle, non-monogamy, kink, BDSM, all kinds of different ways of existing than quote-unquote normal.
Normal. Okay. Oh my gosh. So you're just like the renaissance person.
Yes.
Of the ethical non-monogamy community.
I fucking love that. One of my heroes growing up was Leonardo da Vinci.
But
okay.
So
for that very reason, because it was like, I don't want to have to choose one thing.
Right?
Things are always so interconnected and interwoven. I get really excited about that because, I can try new things and they're all really connected to each other.
Yeah, right? And just, one thing to another. Oh, I'm just going to try this. I'm going to try this. So, educator.
Yes.
What do you do with education?
So a lot. I run a co-founded and co-own a cooperative here in Denver and California called IME Mentors Cooperative. It's a worker-owned cooperative, and so it's run by educators who have existed previously in spaces of education that were toxic and abusive and hostile, which is unfortunately a really common experience for educators. So like we created a place of our own.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. So I do that part-time with my education. I work at the place that I'm doing my PhD part-time. I build curriculum around justice, equity, diversity, inclusion topics.
Oh my
gosh. So at the University of Northern Colorado. So I do curriculum development there and I run a couple of programs there like the LGBTQ mentoring program. So I run that as well. So
congratulations.
That's a little bit, thank you.
Right on.
Yes. And and I'm a student. I'm working on finishing my PhD right now, working on my dissertation.
Oh my gosh, you're almost there.
Yes, I'm so
you're
so,
close.
So close. I'm literally at this stage. I was actually texting a participant this morning about scheduling and like getting intake information in, and I'm at the part that is really, really exciting where I'm
finally
with my community and I'm talking to them and I've been doing all the stuff of, I've taken all the classes. I've taught all my professors and I'm like, yes, I can do this. I'm competent. I can do all the things. Now let me do my thing.
Yes.
And so I'm really, really close to the finish line. I'm at the part that's just really fun and exciting. And I get to like be in community with.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So. What's your dissertation?
Yes. So I'm doing an arts infused dissertation. I do qualitative research and I'm focusing on this topic I've created called identity battle fatigue, which builds on these other theories called like racial battle fatigue and queer battle fatigue. And I'm talking to people who are professionals of color in higher education who are also in the trans nonconforming community and do identity based work. So they do work that is related to one or more of their identities. So their personal and professional lives, just by the nature of the work they do and the people they support, intersects.
Yes.
And I want to learn more about their experiences, and part of what my vision for how I want to present this information is to create like a traveling gallery that goes around universities, and I want to invite upper administration from universities and really call them in and call them out to attention to kind of get to understand what it is really like on the ground for people who have answers for them that they may not actually be listening to.
Oh my gosh. So. That's such
awesome.
A freaking good good place for that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Thank you so much.
How did you come up with that?
I mean, when I got into my PhD program, I thought I was going to do my dissertation around Title IX because my background, my master's, the jobs I worked in previous universities were around Title IX, gender equity, gender justice,
yeah.
Pay equity, you know, all kinds of stuff around gender equity. And I was like, so I worked in Title IX, I worked in student conduct, you know, helping deal with, like, you know, things around gender justice for my job for a while. And so I thought that was what I was going to do. And then I did a research project for one of my classes to kind of pilot the topic and see, okay, how do trans people interact with Title IX as a policy, as a process on campus? And I found out was that they were so smart that they navigated the system to be able to avoid it.
Really?
And because they knew it was going to be more harmful than helpful. And so they were just so strategic. So I couldn't find any participants. So like my first big study that was like this idea that I came with into my degree was just totally shot to shit immediately from the
show. Absolutely.
And I ended up doing a different kind of study called an autoethnography where it's focused on yourself as the researcher, as kind of the participant, and you use your process of research as what you're studying.
Okay.
Right? And it's a thing that you can do intentionally. And in this case, it was like, well, I was going to talk about myself and include myself because I have personal experience related to this, but it ended up being what I focused on entirely. And it was more about like what I knew about the process and how I already knew it was painful and how I knew it didn't support trans people. And so it wasn't really all that surprising when I was faced with the reality that there was no one to talk to because everyone could avoid that part of the system and just take care of themselves in community. So it was really interesting and eye-opening. And so then I just kind of was like, well, I need to figure this out. I need to figure out what I'm researching. And I, you know, I worked at the Gender and Sexuality Resource Center on campus at the time. And so I was in that community and trying to build programs and just focus on my job there. And I tried lots of different types of research and qualitative research. So all kinds of arts infused research, trying to get portraiture involved and trying to get the community action involved, and worked on student activism in campus, and sort of all of that tangled up just led to where I ended up now, which is this process that I'm trying to get folks to reflect on identity battle fatigue. So everything kind of built on each other slowly, and it kind of cleared itself up by the end there.
Just like how you're in all these different things as well, you know. The Renaissance person, of course. Hell yeah, I love it.
So how do you identify then personally?
Around which identities? Happy to share all of them.
Okay
great. So I identify as like trans, non-binary. Some of the words that feel really good for me are like gender fuck or gender full. I feel oftentimes just full of gender, and it's kind of all over the place, and it's not particularly consistent or stagnant.
I
identify as like queer, pansexual, as a relationship anarchist, ethical non-monogamist. I identify as aromantic. That's been a really big one for my non-monogamy journey, I think.
Interesting.
To like helping me let go of a lot of internalized shame I had around non-monogamy and just like performative romanticism and things like that that helped me like, or that had me locked into monogamy. So aromanticism is one of my most recent personal realizations around identity, but that one's a really big one to me. Also like kinky and a leather person. I'm a like pet player and a handler, so I have like pets and ponies. One of my like main kink partners is a pony. We
stop it.
Yeah, he carted me in the pride parade in Denver this
year.
Really? Yes, awesome. If you go watch the videos, I'll show the time stamp with you, but it's really cute.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just so much fun.
My god. We were trying to fight. We were talking to somebody trying to get him on the show. They were like, "No, I do not want to like."
It's
talk
hard
about
for
this.
That's a kink that some people are nervous to spread around publicly.
Yes, fair. Well, so actually, one of the organizations that I work with one of my volunteer groups is the Rocky Mountain Pony Herd. And
Yeah.
So it's Colorado to like all the way down to New Mexico, Arizona, like folks. the Rocky Mountains, and up to Wyoming and into Utah. And so we've got ponies everywhere in the Rocky Mountain Pony Herd and their handlers, but it's also for critters and pets and all other kinds of pet and animal players as well.
Oh my God.
And just friends too. We welcome friends. We're not like a gatekeeping kind of group where like, oh, you have to show us your pony card or your pet card or anything like
your
that.
Your pony card? I'm a stallion.
Show me your collar.
My partner is a stallion.
Oh no,
yes,
shit.
Yes. I have one at home.
I love it. Hell yeah. Right on.
So when did you know that you were both queer and trans?
I was way more aware of my queerness than I was. I mean, I was very aware of my gender, but I was a tomboy. I did speech and debate. I occupied a lot of masculine roles in my femininity growing up. So it wasn't really until college that I even started exploring my gender. And I used to kind of pithily say when I was younger, oh, like, I'm just a queer man trapped in a woman's body, not really reflecting on that with any realness at all.
Just sort of like in passing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, exactly.
I'm just a queer man stuck in a woman's body. And then kind of like, oh, I've been saying that all my life, haven't I?
But that's amazing because it felt very natural for
you. It totally did. But yeah, but I've been queer as long before I even had terminology for it. Like, I just knew I was attracted to people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that people were attractive for so many different reasons. And
I love it.
a person I dated in like high school through college, like we were able to do a lot of exploration together, and she ended up turning out trans as well. And so, you know, it was really funny because in high school she was the like stereotypical jock, like football player, wrestler, masculine man.
Okay.
And also did theater. And we started dating like maybe my junior year, senior year, started having sex or doing kink stuff together, something like that. And I remember someone in like the debate team came to me and was like, oh, you know that he slept with men and that, you know, like he's queer. He's, you know, like saying some in a very derogatory rumor spreading awful kind of way,
trying to
be like, you shouldn't date this person, trying to like maybe be protective or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And I was just like, why do you think we started fucking? like, you don't find a lot of men in Texas in high school who will let you fuck them in the ass.
Right.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, so
right?
I grew up in Houston. So we did a lot of exploration in kink and just identity. And so, you know, we broke up sometime after college. But it was a really great relationship in the sense that we got to do a lot of exploration and stuff. But I've known that I was queer for a really long time. Towards the end of our relationship, so maybe in my early to mid 20s, I started exploring my gender a little bit more seriously, and I ended up getting on testosterone and lived as a man for a while. And then after I felt like, okay, I didn't have to actually be so rigid and like, oh, I have to define myself as a gender.
Always put in a box.
Yeah. And so, like, I always describe it as I cut myself out of one box and sewed myself into another those first couple of years.
Interesting.
Because I just felt like I was, like, it was really freeing in the emotional sense. Like, I felt a lot more emotionally grounded after I got on testosterone, ironically. And I stopped having aggressive outbursts. That's also around the time that I stopped drinking alcohol. Like, we were talking about that, too. So, it all kind of, like, timed similarly. Just healing and listening to my body and my needs and myself a little bit better and more. And
isn't that so hard?
It's so hard.
But I've been this way all my life. You know, I don't want to stop that.
It's like, this is fine. It's fine.
And your body's like, no, bitch, stop it.
Right. And so I kind of took our breakup, and I was already moving to Colorado to start my grad school part two, to start my PhD. And I was like, that's kind of when I decided I had gone to like, I'm a burner. You know, I was at a burner clothing swap when I was back in Houston before I left. And I was like, I'm going to like reclaim some of my femme identity clothes that I had kind of gotten rid of when I had started testosterone, and really just like take this next step in life to just say, I don't have to put myself in a box, and I can just be whoever I feel like that day, and that's okay.
Yes. So you
and
have just days out from there. That you dress more masculine, and then you have days that you dress more feminine.
Totally.
You just yes. kind of go off of how Love you feel
it. And it also doesn't even have to be like exclusive. Have you seen these shoes?
Yes. Oh, yes. I did. And they're fucking amazing.
Thank you. And I don't know that I could put them into a category of like masculine or feminine, because they're like
they're not
men's shoes, but they also have fur and like giant chains on them.
Right.
I know. I got some too that are like, you know, they're all flowery and, you know, bright colors and I'm all.
Yeah.
Those
so
are
it's like,
so
it's definitely
perfect.
Like, yeah, how I show up that day, or how sometimes it is like responsive to how the world might perceive me. Sometimes it is like in defiance of how the world perceives me. Sometimes it's like very internally motivated. So, yeah. And I think like everyone's sense of gender is performative to some degree in some cases. And, you know, we mitigate whether we're letting our internal factors or external factors like control it.
Right.
So it definitely depends on the day and how I'm feeling. But I think that after the last couple of years, I've been maybe like hard, high femme leaning in my aesthetic expression. So definitely a lot of lace and a lot of fur. I was
wearing
both lace and fur today, but also like leather and chains and
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love it.
Yes. I was just admiring now and just every time I've seen your suits, and I was thinking about too, because we were talking about fashion. And I just like appreciate it as an expression thing too. And so it's always even before like my gender journey, it's always been something that's like an expression thing that I have just loved. And I just really appreciate that in others.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
Space for that too.
We do this. We match all the time. I'm her like real life Ken doll.
He is.
Serious.
I don't dress him
movie.
Though.
No,
like,
fuck
he
no.
He dresses himself.
Oh, fuck no.
And I think
that's
huge. Like, I don't pick out, like, sometimes it just depends on the day. Like, sometimes I'm like, I feel like wearing this, and he's like, okay, and then he builds something around what I'm wearing for that day. Other days, he's like, I think I'm going to go with this type of outfit, and then I'm like, oh, I got something that'll match that perfectly.
Yeah. Yes.
And so we just kind of play with it.
It's just a vibe and energy.
But
it was definitely
our thing.
It was so funny. Like, I didn't play with Barbies growing up, and so I didn't know anything about them. But she did. And then we went to the fucking movie, and I was like, I am a real life fucking Ken doll.
Right.
Yes.
Love it.
I joke around because you don't know Kenji super well yet, but Kenji is like Ken.
Yes.
Like everywhere that you go, like when we're at events So when we're at like events or we're going, you know, to the ranch or, you know, anywhere we go. I mean, if we're traveling, it's all of a sudden everybody fucking knows Kenji. By the time we leave the hotel, people are like, Kenji.
Kenji, hey, hey, what's going on? Hell yeah.
So like one time at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was super high and on Urban Dictionary looking up everybody's names. Right? Have you ever done that? Have you ever looked up your name?
Yes, but not recently.
Oh my God.
I've done that with Rowan. I wonder what Rowan is.
Right?
Oh, okay.
And so I looked up Kenji's, and in his description, it literally says, no Kenji. Kenji, and then it had an equal sign, no life. That is so like the epitome of Kenji. Like his loudness, but he's always got his fashion put together. He loves to dress himself.
Oh yeah.
And he helps a lot of people in the community too with
dressing up like guys. That.
Like help having men like step up their game.
Because they're like, hey, I don't know what to do here. And I'm like, dude, give me a day and we will I'll put some stuff together for you. We'll go out. I'll we can shop together.
I need to connect you with my partner drummer. We had this really fun adventure. I love thrifting with him, but he's got some trauma with shopping and stuff like that. And he's this partner I was talking about that is like becoming more fashionable, right? Slowly, surely. And we had this trip to the thrift store, and it was when it was early in his fashion days, and I was trying to get him to try new things, and it was trying to get him to find something cute for Pride. So I'm like tank tops, cut off, short shorts, hot pants, bright colors, you know, like vibrant, you know. like all that kind of shit. God. And I was like, so, you know, we need to go to the women's section, obviously, because sometimes in a thrift store, like, you're not going to find that stuff. You're going to find the...
Especially in the guys' section.
Yeah, like, you're going to find the past your knee shorts from the 2000s that are in plaid that I'm like, no, stop it.
The fucking jackets with the patch on the arms, you know.
And so, yeah, and he was, like, so resistant to it, and we had to, like, unpack so much fucking toxic masculinity, and I was just like, go to the fucking fitting room and just, like, try this shit on, because you are gonna just be so shocked. And it's, he's almost worn the cutoffs and the tank top that he bought out.
Oh, wow.
Because he wears them constantly.
I fucking love that shit. Hell yeah.
Now is like, oh, I need to buy more tank tops, and we went out to the roller rink for one of the adults only nights, and, like, all of the fucking badass roller skating men have these fucking tight ass booty shorts.
Yes!
On. And I was like, see, they can't all be gay. I mean, even if they are, look at their fucking shorts. Oh my God. Right?
Socks, tank top, booty shorts. Yes. Oh my God.
It's
game over.
So cute.
It's sincerely prints
and like, one of the best things about the sex positive communities and all of the events is the dress up part. I know I've said it like a million times on the show, but if you're somebody that even remotely loves fashion. And like last night we were recording with another couple off air, and she was talking about how she didn't really feel like as feminine and as good about herself until she started getting into the lifestyle and going, oh my God, I'm just going to go to Fascinations and try on, you know, this lingerie, or I'm going to go order this, you know, dress.
I have somewhere to wear it to. People like, who will appreciate it and be like, yes, I love this. I love it.
Things that she normally would have felt self-conscious about or wouldn't have just worn to wear, she's now buying, and now she's having so much fun with it. And she goes, even if I don't end up wearing it all out, like, I feel so good about myself just trying just it on and looking it in the mirror.
Yeah, I think that's like one of my favorite things. I have a costume trunk, so I have most of my like kink and fetish gear hung up and in spots in my room, but I have a trunk downstairs that's just costume gear.
Ah, love it.
Because I love that shit. Yeah, hell, one of the kinky camping events that I went to this summer, they did a Pirates and Wenches theme. And I was like, okay, I'm sure I have a pirate costume in here somewhere. So I was just like digging through old costumes. I was like, okay, yes, I have the tube skirt, tube top with the like wildly ornate jacket and the little sword and the wild hat.
I love it.
It was so much fun, and I just love that shit. And just and it's just like I love those spaces that are just like open to exploration and just being fun, because it's being an adult is just boring by default, and if you don't zhuzh it up and make it fun and just explore and like take yourself out of the monotony every time of like, it's just so boring. I don't
So when we're done, you will get all together with that. You get me together with your partner and we'll fucking go.
It's an easy way to be creative. Like, it's an easy way to express yourself. It's such a great way within the lifestyle, because you're expressing yourself. You can do it on a more sexual level. You can be more sexy with it. You can be more fun with it. It can be more costumey. It can be. It can be like,
and
I said,
whatever you want it.
Right.
Exactly. It's never wrong. Never. And there's gonna be someone. There's gonna be someone who is like, I love it. I love this. Like, I love this on you, and this energy is great. And that's it's one thing I just absolutely love about the community, and one of the reasons why like my work is just so filling to me and just so like energizing to me, because I just am always having so much fucking fun.
I can see that though, the, like with the groups and everything that you navigate. Oh my God. I fucking love to do that shit.
God. Like I was sharing with you all the Rocky Mountain Pony Herd before, which is one of the groups I volunteer with, and they're a leather and pet pony and critters and friends kink BDSM leather group that meets, and you know, we've got folks who all the way from Utah to Wyoming through Colorado down into New Mexico, Arizona, and ponies and their handlers and friends and other pets. And so you know, I've got a pony at home, and I myself am recently discovering I might be a wild pony. I'm like, most of my kink pet experience is being a kitten, so like that's where I mostly occupy space and where I have my experience in.
Really? Really?
Yes, yes.
But now you're thinking you're a wild pony.
Yeah, so at one of the campings earlier this summer, one of my other pony friends, Pony Tromper is his scene name, he set up like barrels and cones for some of the ponies to do races because there was like five or six ponies at that event. And I was like, I want to kick him. I want to kick him all down. I want to kick him all down. Yeah. Just running around. And I was like, I think I might be like a wild pony. I don't want anyone to put like a harness on me. I just want to run around and cause chaos.
Right? God. How fucking fun.
That's hilarious.
So how did you define, how did you realize that you were non-monogamous? Did that start early too?
Because
you
were
it sounded like you kind of were in a monogamous relationship with
So
through high school.
Yeah. So the partner who I was with in high school, we were in kind of actually like a monogamish relationship because we were in the kink community and we started as a like, we will play together with other people in a kink or sexual context kind of way.
Okay.
And so I think like before that, I like didn't really have the language and none of my relationships were particularly long enough. Most of them were default monogamous, not really discussed, but just kind of like, that's what they were functionally. We never actually had conversations to really explicitly define it. And like, I think our behavior was in line with it. And so once I got like really involved with the kink community, I started to get more language and understanding. And like, I think partway through that relationship, we were together for like a long time, like 6.5 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
So maybe 3 or 4 years into that relationship, we were like, yeah, I think we're just not monogamous. Like we just are not.
Oh, okay.
We just exclusivity and trying to all, we're like so busy and we're both doing so many things and it's just so hard. And so we started having conversations and and so we kind of opened up from there and started also dating other people. And it was honestly completely unrelated reasons that we didn't work out and our lives were just going in very different directions. And so, you know, she ended up staying in Austin and I ended up moving to Colorado. And so.
So I'm glad that you clarified that.
Yeah.
Because I find that we get a lot of feedback from the vanilla community that, oh, why would you do that? That's just going to end your, that's going to cause issues in your relationship. And honestly, so what's been brought to my attention even more recently is even AI programs are biased against ethical non-monogamy.
Oh yeah.
Because they deem that it's going to have you feel uncomfortable emotions like jealousy and betrayal.
Which
and,
is really just like, we're just giving monogamous people a pass to not be aware of their own emotions or the harm they're doing to their partners.
You know,
like, that's all that tells me being is conscious. That you're not healthy about yourself or the people you're in relationships with.
And they're lying to themselves.
Yes. Right. If they you think that you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's very important that people realize the relationship isn't going to be successful or unsuccessful based off of the structure of the relationship.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be successful or unsuccessful based off of the way that the people in the relationship relate to one another.
Right, exactly. And sometimes that's because like something happens and something goes wrong. And sometimes it's just because those people don't work. You know?
Right.
Like, there's not like a wrongness or someone did something. It's just like you try to make it work and you realize that like you don't fit together in the way that you thought you did. Or you've changed as people and you don't fit together in the ways that you used to anymore. And that's honestly what happened with us. Like as she grew in her transition in gender, like she was not as attracted to masculine like center of people. And I was more attracted to masculine folks and I was to feminine folks at the time. And like kink and the kink community and kink education was really important to me and salient to me. And it was not as much of a community priority for her. And so we were just like going in different directions in our lives. And exactly. And so it was just, we were just hurting each other by staying together. And we were just trying to make it work because we were high school sweethearts and we had supported each other through so much growth and change.
You'd been a lot.
And we'd been a lot to each other. But ultimately, like, I think we ended off on a really good note. And, you know, she was able to hug me when I left and pack my U-Haul and drove to Colorado and stuff. And
it was really good.
And, you know, we don't have an active relationship with each other anymore, which is honestly for the best. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy about it. But it also just helped me, like, when I moved to Colorado, I was like, I am just going to spend the next few years focusing on myself. Mm-hmm. And I just centered and reflected on who I was and my own identities. And that's how I came to that, like, aromantic thing, because I was just performing this like non-monogamous version of the monogamous relationship escalator with that partner. Like, even though we were still dating other people, I was like, we've been dating for so long and we moved in together early, so it's like time to meet for me to like get you a ring and for us to get engaged and for us to get married. And like, I wasn't really even examining like, why do I want to get married? Do I actually want to get married? Is this something that right. is relevant to us in our relationship?
Nope. And it's just life.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
like
the steps
this
that your
life is
script.
Weird.
Program
yes.
to
exactly.
Take.
Exactly. And so like it has been like, I think I probably identified as polyamorous before when we were dating, when we first started dating. And I have come to more of relationship anarchy as an identity for myself, which for me just means that I don't place prescriptive, unexamined hierarchies on my life. And I build my relationships with everyone in my life individually based on how we build stuff
yeah.
together.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's just going to be so different for every single one of us. And I try to, you know, not to say that there isn't hierarchy in life, because it's like, if I have commitments with people, like
right.
obviously there are things that I have to commit to and show up for and like be present for and make space for in my life. But I'm not going to just say that those people get hierarchy in my life because of who they are or what they are in my life. And
right.
not because
how
of,
long you've known them.
Exactly.
Or
like,
you
what
know?
Are they still bringing to my life? Are we both still actively engaging with the same intention and saying like, yes, we're getting the same things out of this and this is what we need? Or like, do I need something else? Like, yeah.
Exactly. So when you transitioned, mm-hmm. did you think, because sexuality is fluid. And so I think totally. Regardless mm-hmm. of whether you go through that step of transitioning and you take hormones, yeah. that your sexuality and what you're attracted to can change.
Absolutely.
However,
yes.
I feel like it's, I wouldn't say a guarantee, but
it's
significantly more likely that
yes.
your sexuality is going to change. Were you made aware of that before you started hormone treatment?
Yeah. I mean, I had definitely done a ton of research, and like mm-hmm. both my doctor and therapist and community I felt very well informed. And it kind of just felt like a flip of a coin. Like, I don't think it's funny, because I think I've always been pansexual. Like,
okay.
that has never changed.
Okay.
It's more like, am I sleeping with more masculine of center people or feminine of center people at any given point in my life?
Okay.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, who am I actually being pulled towards and in any given moment or something like that? So,
okay.
But I have always been pansexual. So that actually has never changed.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
There's this like layer cake of attraction. Have y'all ever seen that on the internet? It's like this little 3D cake.
I think I have.
And it's like, so it has the dimensions of like, sexuality and romantic identity of like gender, who you're attracted to, and also like monogamy or non-monogamy kind of axis.
Oh, okay.
And sort of then like, you know, kink, sexual, platonic, that kind of stuff. And so like for me as
yes.
a, yes, the layer cake of attraction, maybe like cake.io, something. Yeah. it's like, I can see the link in my head. I've looked at that page so many times and referenced it to so many people. It's not the be all end all or anything of like romantic or sexual attraction, but I really like it because I think, you know, it does kind of enforce that idea of like, you can move and things can change mm-hmm. and it can just, it's really dependent. And mm-hmm. So yeah, but I think for me right now, yes, it's that one. Yes, that's it. The attraction
that's awesome.
Layer cake. Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so for me, I'm like, well, I don't, I'm
Religion,
definitely.
Orientation time. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to look up that thing
yeah.
right there.
Yeah. So I think I'm in like the red or crimson on the attraction type.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm aromantic, but I'm open to romantic activity. I'm not like romance averse. So like, I do a lot of things that people externally perceive as romance. Like, I go on dates, or I hold hands with people, or I cuddle with people, or, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, I feel like platonic love and attraction for people when I'm doing those things. Even
okay.
if like a person, like I have a couple of partners who are very romantic people, and who, even if we might be engaging in activity that's romantic, like we've talked about the fact that like we might be feeling different kinds of love, but we're both really loving that activity that we're doing together and loving that it's getting me platonic love and them romantic love.
Okay. Okay.
And so like, it, yeah, so that's like some of the ways that attraction identity has kind of shown up. I'm like, like trying to think like what other identities. You're like, share all of your identities. I'm like, I don't know what ones I haven't covered yet.
You shared a lot. I love that.
Oh, I know. I know.
And I love that, you know, that can change. Like,
yes,
that's
exactly.
It's not necessarily who you were in high school.
No.
And I think a big part of your core, like your values and what you believe in, that kind of sticks with you. Like, yeah. I would say, you know, past the age of 14, 15.
Yeah.
Like,
once you really solidify what is valuable to you.
Right.
You, what's priority. Yeah.
But there's a lot of portions about you or, at, you know, facets of you that can change over time or that can be fluid, yeah, like your sexuality, like your emotional stability and your relationship, you know, what you define as how you want your relationships to be. Mm-hmm. So you're very much, would you say you're in a polycule?
I don't know that I would call it, I usually refer to it as like my relationship constellation.
Oh, okay.
So
I love it.
So you're the comet.
Yep. I'm the comet or people are orbiting or other, me.
Yeah.
It's just, there's like, space is complicated.
Yeah,
right?
It is. So vast.
Yeah. And so like, there's some people who are like more in a synchronous orbit to me. So like I cohabitate with one of my partners and like, this is my partner who's my pony. And like, sometimes I talk about him as like my pony. And sometimes I talk about him as my roommate, and sometimes I talk about him as my partner, because he's all of those things. Mm-hmm. And he's also like aromantic and kinky, and so we align on those things. And it was such a really kind of beautiful moment to connect with the person who was like, yes, I don't want to share a bedroom with you if we move in together. And I was like, oh, thank God. I don't want that either. That's a deal breaker for me too. Yes. And so we have our own little beautiful spaces and our connective spaces, and he's an artist, and so, you know, we have our lives built together, and he supports me in seeing people who, you know, are local that I connect with. I probably have lots of comets in different cities that I have lived in or travel to regularly. And
okay.
I love to do pickup play with kinky folks because I'm teaching or playing at cons and kinky venues and events a lot. And
what
do
is pickup
a lot
play?
Of kink. Oh, that's a great question. So pickup play is negotiated play at an event where you maybe don't know a person at all or have just recently met a person or been introduced to a person.
Okay.
And are connecting for one specific scene or one specific type of play just to like either get to know each other or try a specific type of play out.
Interesting.
Okay. So it might be like it might be for multiple purposes for you to like get to try a specific type of play, mm-hmm. right? So like maybe you want to try electricity or you want to try needles or you want to try flogging or rope or something like that. So maybe you're like, okay, I'm looking for some pickup play specifically for this thing because I've never done it before, or you're trying to get to know someone and you are like, oh, we're both going to this event, like let's plan to do some pickup play there, or like maybe if you want to co-top me or do something with someone else, we can find someone there and we can kind of get connected and get to know each other in a less formal, stressful environment, like just a bedroom where it's like all the energy and attention is just on us, and you can kind of feed off the energy in the room and there's not as much pressure, and it's just about like having fun and exploring and trying things out.
Okay.
So I really love doing pickup play. I'm one of the things I shared with Drew that I didn't actually share is like part of my consulting and education work is I'm also a pro dom. So
how
I definitely
are you?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
So like in my kinky life, I probably lean like I'm very much a switch, and I lean heavily sub, but like if you pay me, I will play.
That's so funny. Oh my
and
god,
that's me. You. I love, especially like introducing people to new experiences. I also just, I do a lot of like my justice, equity, diversity, inclusion education along with my kinky work. So a lot of the time it's also like people unpacking their shit with such
right.
and such, their emotional shit, you know?
Yes.
And like getting through some of that. And so I, yeah, there's definitely Renaissance person vibes for sure. Everything is a little interwoven.
Oh my God.
We can relate to you on that level of this is like our personal and our work and everything all at once.
Yes.
And, you know, even our lives, like this, this lifestyle is our life.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like we still have, I would say what most people consider a traditional home life. Mm-hmm. Like it's just me and my husband and our kids that live in our home. Mm-hmm. And we run our home life very traditionally, but we're very open with them. So they know about the podcast. They know about our work. They know about the events that we attend.
They also know about, you know, a different type of lifestyle.
Right.
A different type of love.
And a different type of mentality around structures,
you know,
of relationships and
yes.
how you really can you know, create the life that you want.
Yeah.
You can, you know, some of them are very...
They're hardcore monogamous.
Yes.
Hardcore.
And that's okay.
That's valid.
That's,
yeah,
that's valid.
You know,
yeah, and that's okay. And that can change, yeah, or it, yeah, cannot.
Exactly.
And really,
that's
like,
fine too. Exactly.
All we ever care about, not only for our children, but for our listeners, for, yeah, our guests, exactly, is that they're living their best life and they're happy.
Exactly.
And that
they're living true to themselves.
True, exactly, to themselves.
You,
exactly,
know?
Right.
And exactly, it, that could be hard within this community.
And it can.
You know, because we sort of have to have, you know, people are like, we have to have this life at, yeah, home, and then we have to have this life at work, and then we have to, you know, then we get to have fun over here. And it's just, yeah, like, man, you got a whole, you're living three different lives,
I know,
here.
Right. Like, such a fragmented person.
Yes. And yes.
It's unfortunately because a big part sometimes of being in this community, mm-hmm, has a stigma around
and
it.
And there's
still,
like, sometimes it's a safety, like sometimes it's a real safety, physical safety, sometimes it's emotional safety. Sometimes,
right,
it's just the perception of that because of the,
right,
stigma, mm-hmm, and it's not, and everyone would actually be fine and no one's heads would explode if you told them, but,
right.
Oh,
but
my
there's
God,
a stigma around it.
There
there's
is
a stigma around having children and being in the lifestyle.
Absolutely.
There's, mm-hmm, a stigma around the idea that if you're kinky or if you're in the lifestyle on any level, that you have like a total disregard for your personal safety and,
yeah,
your health, and,
yeah,
that you're just,
and then
free
by
flowing,
like by the cumulative property or like transitive property, like the people you are caretaking for or whatever, like family and kids. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely such an incredibly misunderstood community for so many reasons and so many facets of it, and it, and like that stigma. And I think that's so connected to just so many different identity communities, like, because, mm-hmm, I've been doing a lot of facilitation work around like neurodivergence the last couple of months.
Oh, nice.
And like disability justice. And like one of the things that happens during that session is that a lot of people after the first half of the session are having this moment of like, Rowan, am I neurodivergent? I think I might be neurodivergent. Like, mm-hmm, oh my God. Like, I think I'm a part of the community. And it's this weird thing of like, oh, but I can't because I'm functioning, or I can't because I'm successful, or like, but I've overcome, or like, I've been fine without accommodations or support. And it's like, no, but you could have also been thriving instead of just struggling.
Yes.
You could have been.
Right.
And part of that too is like, the students these days don't feel that way. Young kids these days still are still like trying to like let go of that stigma. And like, it's so connected to all of these different identities and communities of like, how are we making a space that is actually welcoming for our own happiness and success and empowerment, and
right,
whether that's like about our own self-regulation or how we relate to other people. And like, I think part of like my aromantic journey and my non-monogamous journey that have been really intertwined and really important has empowered me to work on deepening relationships with people regardless of what the type of relationship is, and not being defined, mm-hmm, by like, oh, I cohabitate with this person, therefore I have to have this level of depth of relationship with them that is deeper than all others,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
And that's not actually true.
Nope.
Right? And like, there are, like, my partner that I cohabitate with is a vegetarian and I am not. And so they do a lot of the cooking in the house, but like, I can't really bond with them over cooking meat because it's just not a thing we bond over. But it's also like a really important thing to me, like culturally and from my like background and family and community. My family is Indian and I grew up in Texas. And so both of these communities,
oh,
are like
my
very
gosh,
heavily centered on meat and fish.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right.
I am 100% carnivore.
Oh,
yes,
I know.
Exactly.
Right. So I feel you. Like, I don't eat. Like, once in a while I'll have a fruit. And,
no,
but
serious.
I don't eat vegetables anymore. I don't eat grains. I don't, like, my love is the meat.
It's so
meat.
Good. And,
oh God.
And so, but so I have other folks in my life that I connect with, you know, over those things,
mm-hmm,
that help me like deepen those relationships. And part of that, my own exploration of aromanticism and non-monogamy has just been like, where am I putting my energy? And that doesn't have to be prescribed for me by some imaginary, you know, sociological,
right,
construct of what a relationship should look like.
Right.
So.
And that's your bonding with somebody else, you,
yeah,
know, like, hey, we bond over food.
Exactly.
You know,
and
I don't bond over food with you,
yeah,
but with you, I do.
Yeah.
And it's one of the great aspects of, even if you're not polyamorous,
mm-hmm,
like just being able to have those platonic relationships,
yeah,
where certain people are filling certain buckets,
mm-hmm,
for you,
exactly,
and you can, you know, bond and grow over, you know,
yeah,
whether it's dancing or sports or food or whatever, travel.
And that you can like bond with many people over the same thing too.
Absolutely.
And, like, whether you do it together or separately doesn't like diminish the connection that you and that other person have over that topic. Like,
or your other connections.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then it really just enriches it, because then I'm like, ooh, I have new references for you, and I have new insider connections that we can kind of share and bond over, and I have more stuff to bond with you over, and just more ways to enthuse about it.
I love that you teach classes that are like outside of the box. I heard that you teach a class where you can turn FOMO into
kink.
A kink.
Yeah.
So will you go will you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, please.
I would love to. Yes. So one of the things in my non-monogamy journey has like been dealing with jealousy and navigating FOMO. I have huge FOMO. So if you don't know, FOMO is fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's specifically like a kind of subcategory of jealousy where you're like seeing people on social media or your friends doing things, and it might be real, it might be just, you know, the social media machine, but you're like, oh, I wish I could be there. I'm missing out on that experience. And you're feeling like you're not getting that experience out of it. And so for me, like one of honestly my biggest kinks as a sub is like humiliation and degradation. And like I have like
on the receiving or the giving?
I mean both, but more on the receiving end.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I just say really because it's one of the things like I'm always about not yucking anybody else's yum.
Yes, I love that.
But I, as
it's weird.
I know. But even though I've referred to myself as a bitch before on the show, I'm really not. I'm really.
Yeah, she is. But
he knows. No, I'm just, he knows I'm really not. Like I have a hard time, even if it was, even if you wanted me to say those horrible things to you, I have a hard time saying them because that's not coming from my heart.
Well, and I think that's like such an important thing about negotiation that like, I don't want to say often gets looked over, but maybe is, especially by like vanilla community, doesn't often get perceived, is that when we're talking about limits and safe wording, we're talking just as much about subs and bottoms as we are about tops and doms. And
that 100%.
Like, if you are a dom and your sub or person you're playing with is asking something of you that you're not comfortable with, that isn't, that you can't pull from your heart, you shouldn't be forced to do that, you know?
Right.
And so I love you naming that too, because yes, I think you got to find folks who are willing to
and
be
I don't
in that
mind,
space with you. Yeah.
I don't mind that somebody likes that. Like, I'm not, like I said, I'm not here.
Like, you're just not the one to do it.
Yeah, I'm just, you know,
exactly.
If you want me to be on the other side of that coin, though, and you want me to tell you about how hot you look and how wonderful you are, like, I am your girl. I will stand up for that all day. And so it's just something that I felt like was surprising, because if I'm going to be honest, it's a kink that most people are hesitant to share. Yes.
Yeah. I think like for me, it's so that's how I came to the class, right? And in my class, I talk about how you kind of have to figure out where your yum is and how do you pivot feelings of FOMO and jealousy into kinks that are relevant to you. So like one of the ways, like if you're not into degradation or humiliation like I am, one of the ways, like, because like I'm also not always into it. Like it's not always, you know what I mean? Like
even
if you're into something, it's like, I don't feel like that thing
right
today,
now.
Right? No anal today.
Yeah.
Does today end in Y?
No. Is today a holiday?
But it is.
Today is not a holiday.
But it doesn't end in Y.
And like if that's not your thing, one of the things I also recommend for folks to think about is like, okay, how do we reframe and say, are you FOMO jealous of this experience because it's something you want to do, you want to do with that person, you want to do with that group of people, and how do you make it into related into your dynamic, right?
Okay.
So is this your dom who is at an event that you didn't get to go to, and what does that mean of like, how am I motivating you, my sub, to say, cool, when are we gonna go do an event like this together, right? And how are we motivating you to say, what is related to our dynamic, what is getting you excited, what's putting you there? And I think that, so there's a lot of different ways you can kind of come at it, but it's, for me, it's always about ultimately how are we like processing and transforming our feelings, because none of them are inherently bad.
Right.
Yes. None of our feelings are inherently bad. They don't have a value to them in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And it's really just how do we process, how do we experience them, and how do we parlay that into something that can be better than it was if it wasn't that great, you know? So with FOMO, it's like, okay, I had a bad feeling. I need probably some emotional first aid, either from a person who is in that experience when they're out of the experience, or someone unrelated to the experience to say, like, I still have a cool life. I still do cool things, right? Or like, mm-hmm. I'm still a cool person who's valuable and allowed to have great experiences like that. And then how do I reconnect with that person or the people I'm connected to in that experience and connected to our kinks together, right?
Right.
So is it my dom? Is it my sub, right? How am I getting them to then connect with us and let's do something too? Bring that experience to life. So
interesting.
Yeah, so it doesn't always have to be about humiliation or turning it into an embracing of a negative emotion in a different way, but that's definitely where my brain goes to for myself personally, right, for right. it.
And where do you teach these at, these classes at?
That's a great question. So I've taught all over the place. I've taught at like different cons and festivals and events. I've done things online. There's the Thrive BDSM and Kink Con, which I would highly recommend. It's free. It's all virtual, and it's just all about the intersections of kink, BDSM, and mental health. And that's put on by a group called Pragmatically Kinking, and I love the organizer Devin Stone, who runs that. So I've done, you know, workshops with them. I've done workshops at a couple of cons and events. There's like a queer kink con coming up called Unabashed that's in Denver. Oh my God, it's next weekend.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes, it is.
Unabashed.
I guess this is their third year. So it's becoming an annual thing. I'm really excited because they're at a new venue. And so, yeah, but fingers crossed that the venue works out really well and everyone likes it.
So what goes on at Unabashed?
Yeah, so Unabashed, like a lot of other kink cons, there are sort of educational opportunities and activities throughout the day. So sort of workshops, discussion spaces. Sometimes there might be like community or affinity spaces. And then in the evening, there is a dungeon and a play space.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it's a queer kink con and it's very intentionally made so that there's a big open dungeon. There's that's like open to any kind of play, sex, anything. There's a couple of rules, but it's pretty short. There is a no sex room for folks who want to do kink without sex. There are usually identity specific rooms depending on the night. So like one night there might be like a transgender queer room. Another night there might be like a Black, Indigenous, people of color focus room. And then there's still that big open space.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort of like you can go in and out of any of the spaces, and it's really cool. They have this con I really like a lot. They have a Discord too, so you can connect with community members leading up to the event, like a couple weeks before.
Oh, wow.
And
yes.
Like you can do pickup play, like we mentioned earlier, yes. Or you can post. They actually have like a channel that's specifically looking for play, and you can post like, okay, I'm coming with this experience and I want to try this, or I want to do this, or I'm looking for this kind of person, or yada yada.
I love it. So you can just basically pick and choose however you want
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I've done these classes all over. So like I've hosted them myself. I've done them with different organizations. I've done them with different groups. So yeah, all over.
I love it.
Whomever will have me. Wherever will have me.
Well, and I think this is the perfect point for you to plug yourself. So where can people find you if they want to have you?
Yeah, so you can check me out on my website, rowansconsulting.com. I'm Mix Rowan on most social medias, or Rowan's Consulting. You can also find me on my link tree at Mix Rowan, MXROWEN. So all of those sites also link to one another, so once you find one of them, you should be able to find all of the other
love
ones.
It
that's awesome. Yeah.
Love it. So how did you get hooked up with the Share event?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. So it was kind of random. One of my friends named Sarah, she is a somatic consultant, like DEI practitioner, and kind of works with how do you connect the brain and the body around DEI work, which is really, really cool.
Wow.
And so she and I worked on a couple of consulting gigs together over the last few years with a couple different clients in Denver, and kind of just supported each other as we grew our individual consulting businesses. And we met in a CUTI BIPOC leadership program, and we were both just like leaving higher ed and starting our own business. businesses. And so we're just kind of trying to make space to support each other in that growth. And so she just was like, hey, one of my friends, Sante, is starting to throw this event and it's a non-monogamy event. They're looking for an education coordinator. And I just thought of you. And
that's awesome.
So I want to connect you.
Hell yeah. I love it.
So yeah. And then and just after the first time that Sante and I talked, we just like vibed. And we were actually doing some like venue tours yesterday. And
really,
I was like, we were talking about, you know, for some other events and stuff. And I was just talking to him and he was like, yeah, it's just from the first time we talked, I knew that our visions were aligned in terms of how we want to talk about the community and how we want to make space for the community in different ways.
Oh, yes, you do.
Less stigmatized and more empowering. Gosh. And so, yeah, it was just totally, someone was like, I thought of you, Rowan, and I want to connect to you. And
oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I sometimes think I'm like a really bad entrepreneur because I'm not like an aggressive, going to get leads, like marketing my business kind of person. I'm much more of just like a natural network kind of person, and people just come to me, and it's mm-hmm. just
that's the way it should
it's
be.
The universe,
right?
It's the universe. Like, it just like flows.
Yeah,
you know?
I ask yeah. for what I want, and somehow it finds me.
Yeah, exactly.
For real. Exactly. So we were talking about, because we were trying to get different people to come on the show, and you yeah. like sound like an amazing resource, you yeah. know?
Because and yeah. it happens that they usually find us.
Yeah.
So it usually comes to a point where somebody is like, oh, or we get recommended like, hey, you should have this person on your show.
Yeah.
Or they come to us, but mm-hmm. because again, like Sante mm-hmm. and like you, our visions are aligned.
Yeah.
Like we want this community to have space to grow. Mm-hmm. We want to foster that growth.
Yeah.
We want to do that through education, through being, you know, a resource that they can yeah. come on and find out about clubs and venues and how to mm-hmm. meet other people and how to travel in the lifestyle yeah. and all those type things. But we also want us to foster the local community mm-hmm. here because it's huge. Like, you're very lucky that you had a community in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's one of the, I'm sure it was much more difficult there to find community and to be as open as you've been able to be.
Yeah. It's a lot more. I mean, it's weird because I haven't really changed much since
right.
I've lived in Texas. But it is a lot more behind closed doors. And mm-hmm. it's just obviously become worse. Like, the community is really there and vibrant, the trans community, especially in Texas. But yeah, it can absolutely be hard, and it can, especially like as a business owner. And I don't know, I hate being a business owner in that way. I don't know, sometimes like occupying that space is a little weird.
Right.
Like, I'm a community member and I'm an educator, and being a business owner feels a little odd to me sometimes. But you know, like, it can be hard as a business owner specifically because the way you interact with government and banks and entities and other organizations can just be a lot more cloak and dagger, so to speak, required
right.
to be that way. So
yeah. Right. Yeah, it's hard. It's still, it's just like, I would feel like the cannabis community has had to deal
yes.
with.
I was just
yes.
about
yes.
to say
yep.
that.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
It's something that we struggled with, like, are we wanting to put ourselves out there? Like,
yeah.
you know, when we ask all of our guests when they come on, do you want to, are you okay with using your first name?
Yeah.
And some guests are like, yes, let's do it. And some guests are like, no, I want to change my name.
Yes.
And so we try to respect that because yeah. we're not here to out.
Right.
But at the same time, we're trying to remove that stigma where you feel like you don't have yeah. to change your identity to yeah. come on here and share your identity.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what one of the things I've done the last year since starting my consulting business and just working for myself and reflecting on my own identities and my own recent growth more has really been about, how am I making myself whole again? How am I reintegrating myself in all ways of my life? So I don't have to like take off a hat when I go to a space and be a certain type of Rowan.
Right.
Right. Somebody or dress a certain way.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Uh-huh. Like we were talking about fractured personality.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely, I do have another moniker that I go by in the kink community that's Mixtress, M-X-S-T-R-E-S-S. So it's kind of like
okay.
a gender neutral dom name. And it really is mostly just about like power and the power I'm occupying there. But mm-hmm. like, I go by Mixtress Reba or Mixtress Rowan, depending on the masculine or femme or non-binary
okay.
energy I'm occupying, but that's mostly just about power and specific dynamics that I might be, you know, exchanging with the person, but all of those people are still me, and I am all of those people. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Well, we thank you for coming and sharing all of those people with us. Yes.
Very much.
So, Rowan. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So, if people want to find you next, they know how to find you online, but yes. Do you have any events that you'd like to share with us that are coming up?
Right.
That's a great question. So this is what month are we in?
October.
In October. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really excited about the Share event that we're putting together in December. Obviously, that's a ways away,
Wonderful.
I'm super, super excited about that.
Another one. We love that.
Yes. Yep, we're going to be having some education, like connected with Share. So that Monogamy 101 session that's going on at the center.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I'm like, there's not anything that I'm personally doing right now. I'm just like, if you're going to be at Unabashed, come to my class. I'm going to be teaching a class on ADHD, so people who have autism and ADHD, and calling it super neurodivergent squared. So I'm really excited about that class and how that interacts with kink and how you can use it as a superpower in your kink and not just think of it as a deficit, which is what a lot of us have. And I'm also teaching a sexual pony play class with sexual pony and pet play class and how you explore that around gender. Also at Unabashed with my partner Drummer Pony. So if you're going to be at Unabashed and you're interested in any of those topics, you can absolutely come check me out there.
Wow, that's awesome.
And yeah, if you ever, I do like one-on-one relationship and executive coaching. So if you want to work with me one-on-one, you can reach out directly, and I do custom curriculum. So much of the work I've done has just been, what does the community need and how can I help build it for them?
Exactly. So,
yeah. Well,
exactly.
We appreciate it.
Man, you are such a resource for everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Thank you very much for coming.
Yes. Ishes, if you want more, you can head over to our website at monogamishpodcast.com. There is a dash between that, the M and the I. Mm-hmm. And so, yes. And so check us out over there. And you can also find great resources, like we said, for finding people within the community, finding resources that can support businesses in the community as well. So go over to our website and check that out. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time. Bye, Ishes.